Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. We have Matt Byrne on the board of Greg Pappas in the studio. A little bit later, we should have Mr. Janet Flanagan, Mr. Mike Murphy, Nancy Graham. Should be good. What's his name? Ed Sullivan. It's a big show. It's a big show today.
That's right.
He had some interesting people on his show. I mean, the Beatles and everybody else. If you had to be on the Ed Sullivan show, if you wanted to be good. He didn't like a few people, though. He wasn't a big fan of Buddy Holly's for some reason.
Really?
Not sure why.
Well, he really liked the Jackson 5 a lot. Also, Flip Wilson, I want to say, as well.
Flip Wilson was funny.
Oh, yeah. I was down in Vegas, and in the Sahara, they had a big sign of him riding a tricycle outside the Sahara, like in the 50s and 60s. Funny guy.
We were talk about a small world story. In the Sands, we had the room where was it Ocean's 11, Greg? Where they were Frank Sinatra and Dean and those guys were all in the movie. Well, the Rat Pack, they cut a deal with the Sands where they didn't pay for their rooms or something as long as they did a show every night. And one of the guys had to do a show every night, not all three. Well, it turns out they were having such a good time, all three had a show every night for like the 6 weeks it took for the film, the movie. It became the hardest ticket to get in the country.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the room in there was not very big. I was actually in that room one night to see Johnny Carson, and Johnny Carson came out for a 3-day deal, and he was funny as hell. But the weird part is, I'm sitting there listening to I don't know what station I was on or something, or was a YouTuber. I look at this old Johnny Carson show, and it turns out it must have been a Thursday night where he was talking about flying out to Vegas the next day to spend three nights, a weekend stint at the Sands.
Wow.
And I'm going, it was the night before I saw the guy. I mean, what are the chances of that? But it was so crowded. I don't know if you guys ever been to one of those things. Greg, you ever been to a show up there?
Yeah.
Well, back in the day, shows weren't very expensive. And Johnny Carson was, I think, the ridiculous price of $25. And that included either four beers or three drinks. So they had these tables that were just the perfect size. So four people sat there. They'd bring out, whatever it was, the four drinks, and they'd bring out the 16 drinks, and they'd pluck them down. They'd, like, just fit. And if you had beers, the three buckets with the ice just fit with the glass. You know, that was it. And once in a while, they turn the light off, like, early, and somebody would go down, and you see all the drinks land on somebody or something. Well, somebody did that right before the Johnny thing. This lady had, I don't know how many. These people would carry a tray for like four tables. There'd be like 50 drinks on a tray. You know, it's dark in there. All of a sudden, somebody tripped and landed on somebody. God. But he was hilarious. What's the difference between a comedian and a comic? One tells jokes, and the other one just says regular stuff funny. I mean, Johnny Carson was just tells regular stories funny. He was not a joke guy.
That's right.
Now, what's the difference? Which one's which? I always forget. The comedian or the comic? I think the comic tells jokes.
I think it's, as I've heard before, a comic is sort of the humorous one, whereas the comedian is more of like a stand-up comedian. You know, they have material, they perform jokes with a setup and a punchline, whereas comic is more like Norm Macdonald, where he's kind of a humorous human being.
Well, like Dan Rickles just talks about, you know, people in the place and stuff and makes fun of them. I mean, I think he didn't really tell me he was a character.
Yeah.
But all those guys were like $12, $15, $20, and you went to a show every night. And the weird part is, imagine this, in Vegas, everybody dressed up. You didn't wear a suit and tie, but you always wore a sport coat and nice pants. I mean, nobody ever went to a show like in a t-shirt and blue jeans.
Sweats,
Nothing like that. And But you know, they were all fun. Anyway, I don't want to get off on this topic because we got a quiz. Greg here this morning. By the way, SP Futures up 14. NASDAQ Futures up 42. We're trying to build on the huge rallies of Thursday, Friday. Apple, interesting. Apple had the huge run-up last week with their earnings and so forth. And now Warren Buffett sold, I don't know how many thousand shares that he sells over like Friday or something. Didn't he, Greg, or something?
I look at more at their operating earnings. I mean, they've got a huge cash pile, and their operating earnings were up a bunch. So they were, I want to say, $189 billion in cash and cash equivalents. So they trimmed their Apple stake by about 13% too, which I bet contributed to some of that.
Well, I just this Apple thing is a phenomenon, and the whole market right now is a phenomenon. It's a, you know, to me it's based a lot on concentration. It's based a lot on some people can raise prices, some people can't, and a lot of money in the system. It's a phenomenon that we've probably never really seen before, all those things together. It behooves you to be sort of long, obviously. Even though I have my people protected, I mean, we sure as hell want to be somewhat long, at least for a little bit here. But you also, when you start seeing really weird things, I mean, you start talking about market blow-off tops and stuff, and you know, who the hell can possibly predict one of those? But some of the things about a top are starting to happen. No craziness to the upside. I mean, they're gonna, their earnings, their revenue was down, right? And or had been down for a bunch of quarters, and the cell phones are off what 10% or something, Greg. And yet, they say they're gonna buy back $110 billion worth of stock, and all of a sudden the valuation of the company goes up $160 billion in like one day. And you sit there and go, okay, how exactly? I mean, everybody on TV, of course, you know, listen to them all the time. I said, you know, if they wouldn't have said anything about stock buybacks, the stock probably would have been down on the performance itself. But I got a call Friday from one of our former contributors to the show, and well, Derek was back to work downtown. I'd love to have him back, our oil and gas expert. I've got natural gas, just so we know where we're at here.
Maybe we got a little bounce in natural gas.
Well, I've got it at up 17 cents to 215, but it's gotten back down to what, 165, 170, like three or four times in the last year. Every time was a buy, in retrospect. And then when it got up here, it was a sell. Now, right now, it could be a buy or a sell, nobody knows. But they have options on natural gas, obviously. And somebody evidently bought, I don't know how many they could possibly buy. It was in October or November, Greg, where the $5 options on the Merc. Now, I think they bought them for a penny. All right, so first of all, you don't want to be the person that sell those to somebody. Because how the hell do you hedge them?
Why not have some free money?
Well, yeah. Sell the 280s and buy a Mercedes, as they used to say. So Saudi supposedly raised prices there in oil, but oil's still under $80, $78.96. Saudi keeps thinking they have all this power. I don't know what they do anymore. And certainly they don't have as much as they used to have. But now my question, Greg, is two things. When people do that,
when you go way out of the money,
yeah,
that usually means you're looking for, you know, more than a 50% move or something, because those aren't going to move unless the underlying in whatever it is really, really moves, because it's almost a non-issue until you get to there. Where are we? Like $1.60 something?
No, we're over $2.15.
Yeah. So say you started buying those when it was $1.60. Those aren't really going to move that much until you get to call it, I don't know, at least half of where they are. So you got to get to at least $2.50 for the option market makers to even start worrying about those. And they view it kind of like, okay, this person wants to pay us money for something that's never going to happen. So whether it's worth, you know, a penny or 2 pennies or whatever, they're going to keep selling it, most likely.
Well, there's two reasons to buy those things. I mean, one is they're your Armageddon or your World War whatever.
There's a similar thing happening right now in DJT. Nothing is bid except for November puts way far away. It would have to fall I don't know. It would have to go from $40 or whatever it is now down to $10 for those puts to be in the money. But it's just the same thing. Sometimes someone wants.
Well, one's different. You can't short the stock. DJT. There's none available. That's a problem.
Yeah, but there's no demand except for one down below.
Well, let's back up on the natural gas. I'll give you the pre 1987 and post 1987 sort of explanation on this, Greg. And I think that was before you were trading. I don't know, before you were around, but you were here, 87. But the two things. One is, if you buy that, and I'm going to be ready for this question, what has to happen worldwide for those things to be in the money? No, but hang on to that for a second. You want to either, it's your Armageddon trade. It's sort of like, I've got the VIX at this morning at 13.82, actually up 33 cents. Was it 6 months ago, Greg? We talked about somebody who bought a year ago. Somebody bought the November or December, 85 calls in the VIX. They're
right.
It's either your total Armageddon insurance, although by the time it gets there, I don't know what the market would look like, so I don't know what their insurance of. The other thing, and this is a trader's thing, a pit trader kind of guy, which is different than kind of what you did. But before 87, as long as your deltas were okay, meaning your position, and you looked at how far away you were from the strike, people kind of ignored the fact, for instance, in the Spider is at 512, roughly, 513, that if you sold a whole bunch of 400 puts, nobody cared, right, because you're never going to get there. Well, all of a sudden, in the crash of 87, guess what, you got there. So all of a sudden now it was a unit thing, where no matter what, you couldn't sell 1,000 of anything, even if it was Nowheresville, because there would be a minimum on the haircut. There might be even there's a minimum, say, even if it's $100 and some out of the money, we want some amount of cash, or we'll take on a 50% move or 40% move. Where's that going to go? So there was a big deal about not just distance, but it was units. So if I actually thought, as a trader, that there's going to be a natural gas panic, okay, one way to get ahead of that, and I used to do this in the OEX pit all the time when I traded, well, not all the time, it would be when the opportunity presented itself. If something crazy happened, and all of a sudden you were, every order was a buy put order, sell call order, and things started going down, I would look for any kind of puts outside the money that were at a 16th, which was the minimum at the time, and I'd buy. I wouldn't buy 1,000 of them or anything, but I'd buy a couple hundred of them for two reasons. One is, if it kept going, somebody else who needed units would pay an eighth for them just because he wanted them.
Right, and you would make, 100%.
Yeah, you'd make double your money. But the other thing was, if it really started to go down, say these were the 450 puts and we're at 500, it goes down to 485, and somebody comes flying in to get the 460 puts, paying an arm and a leg for them, I could sell it to them because I already had puts underneath it.
Right.
I already had a buffer.
Yeah.
So it was a way of units. Now, the person who bought these may say, if natural gas gets to $4, say, a lot of people are going to be scrambling for whatever reason for the 460s. And because I have all these 500s in my hot little hand, I can now sell the 460s. And now I have a spread, which is limited risk rather than unlimited risk.
Right.
So it's either a way of being Armageddon, insured in some wacky way, or it's a way of positioning yourself to be able to sell something because you already have it. There's only two ways you can sell something. You know this. Either you already have them or you're selling them naked, right? And in a panic situation, nobody wants to sell anything naked. You never know where anything's going. Correct?
Right.
So, but what the next question is...
Those guys are picking up their... I'd say the buyer is doing what you're talking about, either protecting from Armageddon and or taking a shot that this is a cheap shot. If you're only paying a penny or whatever.
Doesn't get any cheaper.
Yeah, so you're taking a cheap shot at calling it, 5X-ing your money or something. And it's hard to do that if you're not spending nominally very little.
Yeah.
So it's just another strategy. I mean, is it smart? Well, it's not going to make money. I mean, if it's a one delta option, yeah, you got to figure you're going to lose 99 out of 100 times, and you'd like to make at least 99 on that one time you're right, so you can break even. But it's just another way. It gets a lot of hype because, you know, it's so far away.
Well, I used to have the heat seeker thing, and you'd see these trades go by all the time. I won't say always, but a lot of times it's in these. Would you group these things together? It would either be the VIX. You know, somebody will buy, you know, a boatload of the 85s or something in the VIX. Like I said, it's straight under 14. Or it'll be in gold, or it'll be in oil. It'll be a worldwide event sort of product, right? I mean, you don't normally see it happen in, Apple or Microsoft or something. I mean, you might see it. You don't really see it in the indexes that much because they skew up so much. Those out of money puts are expensive, but you'll see it in these world crazy. I won't call it gold crazy. I have a lot of people in gold, but it's, you know, the idea what would cause gold? Why would you buy the?
Well, if you buy the 4,000,
that's what I'm saying.
If you buy the 4,000s in 6 months or something, yeah, you know, you're looking for a sizable move, and really, I don't think what they're looking for is it to go to 4,000. I think they're thinking it's going to make one of those huge up moves, and they just want to be able to, you know, call it 5X or 10X their money.
You paid 10 cents and you're selling it for 50 cents, but by the way, you got 1,000 of them. That's a lot.
Right. It's an inexpensive way.
Because when somebody else really needs them and panics to pay for the insurance, you can sell the insurance because you already got it.
Right.
It's a... What in terms of world events? The other thing, Greg, I want you to comment on, because, you know, you're our futures dude, whatever that means. A lot of these products, though, are it's early on a Monday. These products are very inelastic, and I know you know what that means.
What does that mean for?
That means regular. Every supply and demand curve.
Without supply and demand curve.
Well, I mean, but a supply curve...
It's too early for that, I'm not thinking.
When you say something like oil is a perfect example. Oil is very elastic over time.
You're saying people need gas in their car no matter what.
If all of a sudden people needed more gas...
People need electricity no matter what.
Or needed more gasoline, whatever happened, you can't produce more gasoline tomorrow. I mean, it's already in the system. There's oil wells that are spitting stuff out. It's going to the refineries. It's coming out. If there was all of a sudden an increase of 10% in natural gas, or say a decrease of 10% in oil supplies, okay, from Saudi or someplace, the price of gas would probably almost double because it's inelastic. But then 6 months from now, everybody else in the world will have increased their production to where they'll make up for the 10%.
Yeah, say the futures go wild tomorrow. Someone like Exxon knows that they have, you know, unlimited gas available to them in Texas, and they say, okay, well...
But not tomorrow, a year from
now. But not tomorrow, yeah. But they know in 6 or 8 months they're going to be able to pull out some of that and deliver a whole bunch of supply because what they'll do is they'll slam the futures and then actually come deliver.
Well, you can even do it. What if somebody tomorrow came out and said, if you drink 5 glasses of milk today, after the age of 60, you stop aging, or some crap. And all of a sudden, everybody who hasn't had a glass of milk in 25 years starts drinking milk.
Right.
Well, you're not going to get any cows tomorrow, right? So I'm going to say the supply of milk is fairly inelastic in a week's time. But if all of a sudden everybody goes, wait a minute, instead of producing, you know, X number of gallons of milk a day, we're going to do, you know, 30% more, well, 2 years from now, I bet we got a lot more cows, right? So inelastic means you can't respond to the newer supply or the new demand quickly. So oil is perfectly like that. You'll see oil go up and down. That's why when you look at the tables of how many rigs are out there pumping, it's like a 2 or 3 year price of oil get really high. All of a sudden, you see the rig count go up for like 3 years. All of a sudden, it gets low, and it takes 3 years for it to go down, right? I mean, it's always following the prices. But I guess my question is, what would it take worldwide for natural gas to get to $5? I mean, part of it, I'll start out by saying, we've had this El Nino, you know, the warm Pacific, and by all accounts now, it's retreating faster than it ever has, to where next year it might be a La Nina, which means that the northern hemisphere here would be a lot cooler in other places. So maybe the natural gas demand in the U.S. is going to go up because we had this super mild winter this year.
And you're right on when you say the location matters.
Yeah.
Because in our case, we do Henry Hub, which is Louisiana, and we trade natural gas here. It's very easy because of that transport cost to have prices in Europe or different locations to go way, you know, decouple. I don't know.
Yeah.
So depending on where you are and how hard it is to transport, that matters a lot. In the same way that oil, you could see a scenario in which the rest of the world might be paying, you know, $1 or $100, where we would be paying, you know, 80 if we decide to keep, or less, it really, if we decided to keep a lot here. Those spreads start to open up big time once you actually have conflict.
What do you think it actually costs to get a barrel of oil from here to Europe? It's got to be $5. Maybe is it $5, $3, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I haven't looked. Depends on, you know, which way they take. So the pirates kind of changed some of that more recently. But that's there's scenarios in which you could have the price of, call it West Texas and or Brent, way higher in places where it's just harder to get.
Well, I could see some combination of, I mean, right now we didn't have any ability to send natural gas overseas. Well, now you do, because you've got these liquid natural gas ships.
Which are, again, like you said before, you know, there's only a certain supply of those. And we saw that open up as Ukraine was, and I think we talked a lot about the process in which it gets there and the insurance and everything required of shipping it that far and the energy, you know, because you got to keep it down, the temperature down. But it depends a lot where you are. And even in the U.S., you can see it, you know, grain prices, they change depending on how far you have to move thousands and thousands of pounds of stuff. You know,
well, the natural gas stuff, when the Russians were having this whole thing going on with the Ukraine, the prices got high, and they were building these ships. I mean, it's not like there's a zillion of them, kind of as fast as they can. And some of them now, I think, have the capability of taking regular gas on and compressing it on the ship, which they didn't use. Anyway, all of a sudden, the Russian thing, somehow they in Europe made this deal. We got a warm winter here. Wasn't there a time, Greg, where these liquid natural gas ships were floating around over here? Yeah, they're going up and down the coast, and nobody wanted them.
Right.
So all of a sudden, but if you all of a sudden had a cold weather here, maybe a cold winter in Europe, and all of a sudden the Russians took that time to say, well, you know, you're not getting our gas.
That's where your $4 and $5.
Yeah, that's where you get
four and five. Yeah, that's where those things start to go from a penny to, call it, 20 cents. And, you know, jackpot if that starts happening because you're long a whole bunch. If not, well, it was you wasted a whole lot of pennies.
But you'd end up, I think, a lot of multiple things would have to happen. And by the way, could you get a Russian crisis, a cold winter here in Europe, all in the same year? Hell yeah. I don't know if
if it does end up going there, then you're retired.
Yeah.
so it's nice. It's sometimes we would call them, or, you know, lottery tickets, similar to buying a lottery ticket, because you know it's not really going to pay off. But you might, you know, pick up the couple $100, and they're much more likely to pick up, oh, well, I spent $20 on tickets. Well, I won 40. Okay, that works.
Hey, speaking of doing research for Stacks and Jacks, there I was at the Myers buying some coffee, and I talked a while. I always mention that the
our Stocks and Jocks portfolio has a couple lottery tickets.
We should have. We'll get a load of this. I always said, you know, the instant lotto, or those instant games, which I don't know what those things are. They were up to like $30. They now have a $50 game, $50 for scratch off. They claim there's $15 million prizes in the mix.
Yikes!
Yeah, I don't think I thought of coming up with $50 for a lottery ticket. That's something a guy like Jan Flanagan would do. We'll talk to him in a minute.
Personally, I like doing fantasy. At least it's more fun.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, but you're not, your demand curve is not as skewed to the right. Your risk reward curve is not as skewed to the right.
We're talking about risk curves and demand curves at Monday morning, 6 a.m.
Matt, you know what I'm talking about by saying that? Your
say
risk
no.
reward?
Make him stop.
Make him stop.
Keep going. Why not? Yeah.
It means that if you're willing to, most of the time when people make a bet, they look at the expected return.
No, they don't.
Well, you should rationally. Okay?
They're buying lottery tickets.
Well, that's my point. But if you're buying a lottery ticket, if you went to play blackjack, okay, and if every time you bet make a 5 hour bet, it's roughly 50-50 odds. If they only paid you back $2, you'd say I'm not doing this, okay, because it's crazy. But when the winning thing is a life changing event.
You're paying for the dream.
Yeah, you're paying for the dream. You're even though the lottery only pays out 40% of what it takes in on a good day, maybe it's 42% or something, you're willing to take that chance because if you do win, you're going to tell your boss, take this job and shove it, get a new house, get a new car, or whatever you're going to get. It's a life changing.
And then you buy more lottery tickets.
And then buy more lottery. You know what? If you won, didn't somebody win a big one twice? Some guy in Maryland or something?
See, that's how I think of it. If you win the lotto and you only bought, call it $100,000 worth of lotto tickets, then you could buy unlimited more lotto tickets.
I think somebody had like an $800,000 win and then a $500,000 win.
If it worked once, it's going to work again.
I bought those damn things for whenever I got over a number for a while. I bought one for my brother, my mother, and Audrey. Now collecting from those three people is very difficult. But so I would just buy it. And then I figure, okay, if I get it, I'm splitting it up four ways. And all of a sudden, one day, I give the guy the ticket, and he gives me $5. And I go, what's that for? This is like after years. I never even had a $2 winner in like 10 years. I these people are win. I don't know. Sometimes the office here will get 15 tickets, and I go through to check the numbers. We're lucky to get one number. How the hell do you get five? Anyway, S&P Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Support the Stocks and Jocks team. Hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in studio. S&P Futures up 1650. NASDAQ Futures up 42. We're were giddy here over the last couple of days. I mean, Friday was another huge day. The upside, we had the Dow was up, as soon as my machine pops up here, we'll tell you what the Dow was up. It was up 450, S&P up 63, NASDAQ up 315, so it's like 2 days in a row. So much for the sell in May and go away. Right now, it's buy in May and stay, at least so far. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 37, let's call that one flat. Hang Seng up 102. These guys are way up to 18,578. Remember, they ducked under 16, didn't they, Greg? Hang Seng? Shanghai's up 35, up 1.2%. 3140, no longer under 3,000. This softer than expected U.S. jobs data. Tell you what, I never liked trading in areas where bad news is good news and the other way around. It's just a zero-sum game, it seems to me. Over in Europe, DAX up 164.9%. These guys are playing catch-up. FTSE up 41.5%. CAC around up 62.8%. So all's well over there as well. Bonds down 1 basis point, 4.48. These guys are down. They no longer look like they're making a run at 5. So that's one of the reasons why the market has this kind of relief rally going. It probably is the reason. The Bund down 5 basis point, 2.45. Japan unchanged at 0.90. Oil up 68 cents, but still under 80, 78.79. It looked like it was going 85 or 90, then backed off, and now we're kind of right here. Brent up 64 cents, 83.60. Natural gas up 2 cents, 217. RBOB unchanged, 256. We've got gold up $20.90, 23.29. I'm not saying it's going to make a run at 2,400. Looks like it wants to make a run at 23.50 at least. Silver up 69 cents, 2.6%. That's $27.38. Silver is not a stock. This thing has made dramatic moves within a range in the last few years, like something I haven't seen in a while. Copper up 7 cents, 463. Why don't we just buy this copper at 390 and leave town for like 4 months, Greg? What a great trade that would have been. Crypto, Bitcoin up 203, 64,124. And we have the U.S. dollar, last but not least. Euro's at 107.7, and the British pound at 125.6. So both of those are up just a little bit, but not much. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? A lot of sports, Cubbies.
Oh, definitely. We got a lot of sports for you. It's currently 6:39 right here in Chicago. Time is 6:39 on May 6, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, 47 degrees this morning with a high of 61. Expect partly cloudy skies for most of the day downtown. Down in Phoenix, 59 degrees this morning with clear skies and a high of 85. As far as sports, here we are. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs won their game against the Milwaukee Brewers 0-5. And White Sox won as well against the St. Louis Cardinals 5-1. In the NBA playoffs yesterday, first round game 7, Cleveland Cavaliers came out on top against Orlando Magic 106-94. And in the NHL playoffs, second round, New York Rangers beat Carolina Hurricanes 4-3. In the West first round, Dallas Stars won against Vegas Knights 2-1. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
Hey, John. I just got a text from one of my former floor, well, one of my good buddies that were a former floor trader with me, that one of our friends from the pit, you know, it was 20-some years ago, we all left the floor. Well, this one guy's still on the floor, but just passed away. A guy named Fred Wheaties, very nice fellow, which brings up an interesting story about sports guys like this Greg Pappas. Freddie used to engineer, being an Illinois fan. We would go to a away Illinois game every year for a streak of about 3-4 years. So one year we decided to go down to Ohio State, right? So we fly down there. You could tell in the plane it was just nothing but rain, right? So we land in this monsoon. We get to the airport. Turns out the river that's next to whatever the stadium is, not the Olin Tangi, I think it's the other one, it's not up to the stadium, but it's well over its banks, right? We go to this really nice motel or hotel and with a great sports bar. Well, turns out we land and there's only like one cab, and there's us and there's this other guy. He goes, "Hey guys, can I share the cab with you?" Well, there's four of us. Good news is I'm the biggest one, so I get the front seat. The other four guys complain and all get out. I was just saying, "Oh yeah, we can't let this guy stand here." So everybody's grumping. But anyway, we get in the back seat with Freddie and Ronnie and another guy named Tony House. And this guy comes in, he's like sitting on somebody's lap, right? But I mean, it's raining like you've never seen. Turns out the guy is the field judge or whatever he is for the game the next day. And these guys being sports, all of a sudden, I can't believe we welcomed this guy to the camp. The guy talked about refereeing games all the way to the thing. He was spectacular. I didn't realize there were in those days there's three guys that always go together. It was the referee, the head linesman, and I think the back judge. And for whatever reason, you can fill in the other three, but those three somehow have to know how to work together. And I never refereed football, but can you have any idea why that is? I mean, with those three people, I guess are the key. But the umpire is the guy who stands behind and the defense in the middle. I guess anybody can be an umpire if you stay out of everybody's way. But he had stories going back. I mean, all of a sudden now they didn't want the guy in the cabin. They were very pissed off when we made it to the hotel. Anyway, Freddie was a terrific guy, and R.I.P. Mr. Fred Wheaties. Interesting. But I'll tell you this, Greg, and Greg knows a lot about the restaurant. I've never seen a sports bar as nice as the one we were in. They had one of these places that had the original, like, six or seven TVs before, big, huge TVs, before they really cost a fortune. But every table, Greg, had a speaker and buttons, and you could press to hear the sound at your table from the game you were watching. I've never seen that sense, have you?
Yikes.
Imagine the cost of that. But you could sit down and all of a sudden, oh, we want to watch Ohio State. You hit that button, or no, we don't watch
it. And it showed up.
No, the sound started playing out of your... Well, you still had to watch it up on the TVs because they were all...
Oh, so they had the different audios.
Yeah, the different audios. It was just loud enough for the table. It didn't bother anybody else.
Do you remember the library at Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Where the listening lab, so you know, they had you write a set of headphones. I think you just gave your ID. You didn't have to pay anything. And you selected something to put on however many, you know, there were phonographs all over this place. And they would tell you your selection will be on channel so-and-so. It'll, you know, that would be the phonograph number. So you'd go back and plug your jack into the designated thing and, you know, turn up the volume. And voila, here's your requested piece of music. It was like a jukebox. Anybody else could tune into it, of course. You know, you could just change your own channel. But I thought that was pretty cool back in 1972.
What, 2 days after our police chief, who I actually like, said, don't worry, we got this entire convention covered. We had one of the nastiest weekends we've had in forever. Well, at this time of the year, 7 killed, 29 wounded, including 2 people shot right out in front of Wrigley Fields. Do you think people coming to town for this convention are looking at that, going, if they can shoot people up in Wrigley Field, that's a way better neighborhood than where the United Center is. What's going on here? I mean, we're not making any progress.
The Cinco de Mayo parade was rerouted, canceled because of warring gangs yesterday.
And you have all these young policemen standing around in a crowd together. I don't know if they're effective or not, John. I don't want to criticize, but I mean, what are we doing here? We have absolutely no ability to stop this. It doesn't appear, and I don't know if it's we're not trying, we're not whatever. I love the fact that they actually found the guy who killed that policeman. I mean, you know, obviously I give to the policeman's memorial and everything, and my heart is out for these guys, but they started rattling off all the stuff you see like on TV. Oh, we did DNA, we did fingerprints, we did this and that, we cracked his mother's credit card. And I'm thinking, what about all the other people that get killed? Do they do anything for them? When Monty got his car stolen, Greg, they wanted no part of fingerprints in that thing.
No, it takes too much time.
Well, not only that, you might actually find out the guys in the system and have to go pick them up. Why would you want to do that? Because then what are you going to do with them? You don't want them in jail, right?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, what are the chances of the people who stole Monty's...
Because you can't prove it, really.
Well, why would that guy's fingerprints get in Monty's car?
I'm sure a lawyer could probably figure out 10 different reasons.
I think not. Well. Finger, you know,
unless you have the, like you said before, unless you have the video or the
fingerprints are pretty good. Okay. You have DNA in there.
Yeah, they could have just been, I don't know, going for a joyride.
Well, yeah, well, either way, you don't get to steal somebody's car for a joyride. But my point is, they don't want to know, and yet now, when you want to, and this was surely a good reason enough to want to, look at the resources you can bring to bear. But what is it, 84% of the murders don't even have a suspect? I got to believe that 10 of them, if you put this kind of effort into it, you'd get 10 of them, wouldn't you? 10%. I think somewhere along the line, you have to take like every 10th case or something whether it's a smaller case or not, and you got to run it to ground just so people have some idea that that could be them next time. Right now, there's nothing. I don't. And that, you know, we have this convention here. What's this going to be like, Jen? I mean, I hope it's not. Maybe I hope the stuff in Gaza is going to be straightened out by then, at least to a big extent, so we won't have that to worry about, hopefully. Then this Netanyahu comes out and says, if we have to go it alone, we'll go it alone. How the hell are they going to go without us? We just gave them how much dough. How are those guys going to go without our support? I mean, who are they, or Europe's support? Who are they kidding?
Tom, we're in a climate now where, you know, nobody really fears the police, you know, let alone respects them.
Haven't we seen this before, 1968, where there was a big kind of divide on war, and then the convention happened here?
Well, yeah, but do you want to go through that again? For us, first time for you.
I don't know, maybe.
I'm thinking no.
Maybe that's what the country wants or needs.
The difference is those people were very concerned about a war we had no business in, and by the way, you could be there the next day.
Yeah, I think
it's a little different.
they were saying, you know, this is not in our interest and we don't want to go. Now I'm not sure what, especially more recently, those kids at DePaul
To say that 17 and 18-year-olds in 1968 were more attuned to the news than 17 or 18-year-olds today, you know, is is like saying the lake's full of water. Yeah. I mean, we were attuned to the news, Greg and Matt. Would you say that, Jen? I mean,
that had been, you know, remember the National Guard had been called out the previous April after the King assassination on the West Side. I'll always remember, Tom, watching the convention, and you had, you know, the Daily people, you know, down in front. It was their town, you know, they had hosted this thing. And then he had the left wing of the party, Abraham Ribicoff of Connecticut, the senator, was, you know, looking down his nose at the mayor, you know, holding him responsible for this disaster that was unfolding out in the streets. And I thought, well, this party isn't in any way, shape, or form together on any of these issues. And, you know, the outcome of it, you know, Humphrey was nominated. And by then, the thing had just dissolved into pandemonium, practically. You could hardly hear some of the speeches. Everybody was chanting and yelling and picketing, and outside it was worse. It took Chicago 28 years to get another convention, you know, in 1996 for Clinton's second term.
By the way, I went to that one. It was interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
It's been 28 years since that one. It might be longer after this one before Chicago gets it again.
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of them are kind of bad decisions. For those that don't know, the demonstrators are a real lot of them. Because even though the how many people, Greg, where do you think that convention was? Well, actually, it was Chicago native.
For which
68.
One? 68. I don't know. Some hotel?
No, it was at the International Amphitheater.
Why
was the stadium not available, John? I don't remember that part.
I can't remember, and it was never really, as I recall, offered as a fallback after McCormick Place burned. You know, that was the week before the great snowstorm, January 67, when McCormick Place...
Well, McCormick Place didn't have an arena.
No, but I mean, it was going to be at Erie Crown. That was the original plan.
Okay.
And then they had already committed to get the convention, and then Daley, you know, had to, like, you know, pull some rabbits out of his head to get it reassigned. I don't remember the stadium ever being offered, although it had been, of course, the host of many conventions for both parties in the past. And then there was the telephone strike, you know, the IBEW workers refused to. I mean, so that the whole, and then you had the King riots. You know, all this stuff was going on with Vietnam boiling over in the background, and Johnson dropping out, and RFK being assassinated. I mean, I wouldn't want to go through that.
Oh, no, it was pretty awful. But the weird part, Greg and Matt, is that the demonstrations were not at the amphitheater. It's on the south side. You can't get there from here, basically. So all
the Blackstone Hotel, you know, downtown.
Yeah, everybody and all the conventioners were staying downtown, basically on Michigan Avenue. So the demonstrators were all in Grant Park, and the city had an ordinance that say you can't be in the park past 11 o'clock. And one of the dumbest moves, even though I was a fan of Mayor Daley and still am, dumbest moves I've ever heard was said, we have to clear out the park. Now, these people had nowhere else to go. So instead of hauling in, you know, 500 porta-potties or whatever you want to do, they decided they were going to clear the park out, which, John, is that about the dumbest decision? Whenever you do these things, there's a sense of, do I have to clear it out, or are they getting tired enough of it? Tired enough of it themselves, well, if I give it another day, they'll just get the hell out of here because they're tired of standing there being dirty and no place to go to the bathroom. I mean, there's a certain sense to leadership that sometimes people have, sometimes they don't, right, John? I mean, if Daley would have
just... Yeah, well, you know, again, you got to put yourself back in that time, Tom, and after what the city and the country had been through in the last 6 months, I'm sure that, you know, there were, you know, otherwise cooler heads that said, we can't let this continue. We got to get these people out of here.
But they had nowhere to go.
Nowadays, you would think, oh, we can't do that. Back then, it seemed like the right decision. And I'm not saying it necessarily was, but I'm just saying that there was plenty of justification for doing that after what we had been through.
But in retrospect, they had nowhere else to go.
Yeah, well, in retrospect, it's great, Tom, but, you know, we can't make
jail.
Decisions and have them kick in.
Well, yeah, it's jail. Well, I'm looking here at the Hey Jackass on the weekend, and I am stunned not by the numbers, because if you go back the years, this is the amount of shootings and killings in the city. I'm stunned not by the numbers, but the randomness of the neighborhoods. But I'm gonna say, John, without looking at them, I suppose I should research it before I say something like this. I'm gonna say it was usually in certain neighborhoods in the middle of the night. And now, look at these numbers. 1 p.m. Friday, 3:15 Friday, it's broad daylight. 10:25 Friday night. Saturday, where are we? 12:45 p.m., 2:35 p.m., 3:20 p.m., 4:50, 7:15, 9:15. This is broad daylight. And then across from Wrigley Field, 1:15 in the morning. Well, that neighborhood is teeming with people at 1:15 in the morning. There's nothing but bars and restaurants there. Some guys get out of cars and they start shooting at people. They don't care where they hit. This is insane. I mean, you know, we've gotten numb to it, but you can't have this happen. I mean, somehow or another, you got to corral these people. And I don't know how, you know, whoever they are, whether I don't know what kind of gangs they are, what color they are, or whatever. But whoever they are, you got to do something. I don't see how you don't. Do you?
No, there's always some, you know, faction that sees, you know, throwing out the original game plan, you know, having shootings 24/7, that's beneficial to whatever interest you're, you know, behind. And you know, the more unrest, the better, it seems to be the formula today. I mean, you got, you know, the campuses up in arms. You got, you know, demonstrations at the Art Institute. They had to be kicked out of the Art Institute's North Garden the other day. This is just like a floating crab game of stuff to stir everybody up. And a random shooting here or there works for somebody who wants to see the whole system, you know, come apart. And I don't want to assign identities because I don't know for sure. But none of this is accidental, Tom. Believe me, none of it is accidental. It's all been orchestrated, it's being funded, and it's being carefully watched for how it unfolds. And the convention is just another faction.
Well, what is the motivation, for lack of a better term? I guess you can make the bet that if everything falls apart, that you're going to end up somehow monetarily on top. But how does anybody know how they're going to do in chaos? I mean, that's one hell of a bet.
Well, this means that you have to kind of, you're trying to segregate, well, who would be in favor of this, who would be against it, and it couldn't be anybody, you know, here who would be in favor of it. And I would say, well, of course there are people here in favor of it. They want to see the whole system thrown up for grabs. You know, it's a racist state, Tom. You know, look at the horrible crimes we've committed throughout our history. It's about time we brought this whole operation down.
Well, I'm just quoting what people are saying. But that's, we all know that's insanity. I mean, stuff has happened. I mean, if Genghis Khan didn't conquer this or that, but he did. 2,000 years ago. I mean, what are you going to do?
I'm just saying that there's plenty of money and energy behind this kind of destruction. It's not just you know, an accidental situation that we're confronted with here. It's been coordinated and it's being driven by factions within this country and from outside this country. So,
well, you know exactly where I am on this. I mean, I'm horrified of what happened on October 6th and all those kinds of things, and I'm really kind of curious as to how it all played out. And some people seem to know in advance. If you look at some of the stock and option trading over there, which always makes me sick, to be honest with you. But right now, I think you're at the point where you're not cleaning out Hamas. You're making more enemies. There's no real reason to all of a sudden now invade that other city. I think enough's enough, and that's where I'm at. So I'm kind of with people that saying, okay, however many have died on both sides, let's figure it out. I mean, I hope it may not work out that way, and who knows? Maybe in 30 years from now, people look back and say the chief was wrong on this. But I think you got to stop some shooting here, John. I really do. I mean, I'm always for the stop shooting stuff, but this time there's enough on both sides. There's enough people killed and wounded. You got to get hostages back on both sides. Let's act like adults here. Finally, can we? I mean, maybe not. But if you can't, I mean, maybe, you know, who knows who's behind what and everything. But some place you got to stop the violence, because you can't bring the people back that you killed in the middle. And I don't like this concept of collateral damage, because guess what? You and I might be collateral damage someday, and I don't want it to happen to anybody. You know, anybody. So. I know there's two sides of every story, and I know, by the way, Kevin asked the question, was Bridgeport supposed to benefit from the amphitheater? I don't think so. The amphitheater was in the stockyards. There was nothing there. It's not like it was Wrigleyville with a million bars and restaurants that were going to do fine. I don't think that was ever part of the equation, do you? It might have been, but I don't think so.
With the amphitheater, you mean?
Yeah.
No, well, and, I mean, there was a march from the, you know, from the Loop.
Which is a long way to march, by the way. That's like about.
It's like
7 miles.
It was headed toward the amphitheater.
That's pretty good.
Of course, the thing is, nobody in the amphitheater knew what was going on downtown.
Right.
This is when the news media, of course, got a hold of it. Then you had Dan Rather and all these other people, you know, cross cutting between speeches on the floor and the credentials battle, and then what was going on downtown with police bashing heads and stuff. They made a meal out of it, and you know, did everything possible to humiliate the city.
Oh yeah. I went to the last convention, the one I went to, which was the peaceful one. They really did a number on the United Center. I mean, they took sections of seats out and the amount of cables and stuff in the place for the news. I mean, you know, what do they call those things, Greg? You put over like a wire so people don't trip on the wire. It's like a big, you know, it's like a little bridge sort of thing. Those things were like not a couple feet, but like 8 inches high with the cables. You had to walk over those things. They had. But talk about the haves and the have-nots. I'm so glad I went. I was stunned. For one night, I was one of the haves, John. Because I went with Duke Chapman and Bill Florsch from the SIBO, and Chuck Henry, the president, and I was the head of the marketing committee and on the board, so they said, you come with. So I was, plus I probably was a second-ranking board member at the time. A couple other guys went. We went, and all downstairs, you know, where all the areas are for, like, the hot dogs and stuff. There's individual tents set up, which various law firms and lobby firms have all, they're all catered, and they got all the booze in there and stuff. So we hit a couple of those, because our law firm was Patton Boggs and Blow. How's that for a name? Tommy Boggs was our guy, and he was the son of Hale Boggs. Was he Louisiana? He was somewhere.
Yeah.
You know who his sister was? That many
Cokie
people?
Roberts?
Yeah, yeah.
You know who Hale Boggs was, too? He was on the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
Didn't want to go along with the final report and has never been found, as far as I know.
Yeah, he disappeared, right?
Yeah, yeah, the airplane.
Yeah,
And I think they all know exactly what happened to
him. I think so, too.
They were bought off.
And so he was our guy, and we were there, and then somebody had a skybox. So we went way up to the third floor skybox. I would never, if somebody invited me, I suppose I'd go, but those things are horrible. You can barely see the floor. Matter of fact, Hillary was giving her speech, and the speech was coming over the TV faster than the sound could make it from the floor. That's how far away are that place. Anyway, but the regular schlumps, like say a guy like Matt Byrne gets elected as a delegate from like Iowa or someplace, they're sitting in the stands like in flannel shirts buying beers like they're at a basketball game. And meanwhile, I'm going from tent city, whatever you wanted, booze one after another, and then up to the skybox. Everybody else is sitting there like they're at a ball game.
Those are my people.
Yeah, well, they were kind of my people too. But all of a sudden, you know, somebody will go, "Ah, in the great state of Idaho, Idaho," and 50 guys go, "Yeah," you know, jump up, and you're going, "What is this?" It's
Tom. It's not so long ago in 1996. Nobody had a cell phone.
Yeah.
There's no social media. I can't imagine. You know, that once something gets started in any town or any place in the world where there's some activity going on, that everybody in the convention, you know, both parties, is going to know about it immediately. And if you want to coordinate unrest, or you know, start something that's going to be pretty hard to put out, it's so much easier now to do than it ever was. And I think everybody who's inclined to disrupt things knows this better than I do, and they're just waiting, you know, to pull the switch.
You're right. Boy, come to think of it, that's interesting. We got a dash to break here, but it's interesting though, Jan. It probably was the last convention before cell phones.
Yeah.
Because when did everybody start getting them? Probably 2000, maybe?
I remember being just absolutely astounded in April of 2001. This is before 9/11. I was in New York. And everybody on the street I saw, you know, had a cell phone. And practically nobody in Chicago on the street had a cell phone then. I had a cell phone, but I wasn't walking around talking to everybody all day long on it.
Well, right.
I thought, my God, what's going on here? This will be like Chicago pretty soon. And in a matter of 5 years or so,
when did Matt, maybe when did car phones become available? That was like mid-90s?
Oh, 90. I remember them in 90, 89, 90, car phone.
Because then, but then you had, it was a real phone in the car. It was a real phone. Anyway, SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 40. Talk about reminiscing. It'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Investments will make you wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Has your broker ever given you the brush off or a non-answer when you had a question about stocks and options? This was my experience. Live broker assistance was at a premium, and not getting help used to cost me money. But then I switched to PTI Securities and Futures. PTI's brokers answer the phone by the third ring to respond to my questions, place my trades, and take time to counsel me on the prospective trades I'm thinking about. The superior customer service I've received from PTI brokers has actually made me money, and who couldn't use that? PTI brokers are licensed investment professionals with an average of 10 years on the trading floor. Not only that, they offer free investor education sessions and even publish stocks they're watching on their website, ptisecurities.com. If you like personalized attention and actually getting answers from a live broker, call PTI Securities and Futures toll-free at 1-800-821-4968 or visit ptisecurities.com. I recommend you make the switch. Believe me, your portfolio will thank you.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye.
The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
A little Neil Young?
Yeah, why not?
Where do you got to go to find a heart of gold now?
I think down in New Orleans. That's where he is right now.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure he had a heart of gold, but...
Yeah, I don't think so.
The one guy, who was the guy who lived, went off the grid for... Was that David Crosby or was that Graham Nash?
Oh, gosh. Might have been Crosby.
I think it might have been David Crosby. He lived right down the hill from Dr. J's cousin in Mill Valley.
No kidding.
And he painted his windows black from the inside. Can't see out of windows painted black.
No, not at all.
And he was in there like kind of for a while. then he came out. John, you couldn't write fiction like this, could you?
All of our heroes, Tom.
Yeah, I know. Did you... We got an interesting... we're hoping Mike will pipe in here. We got an interesting... If he doesn't, we'll wait till Lou comes in. The thing he sent this... it's called a... it's written by the guy from, what, Blackwater? So, I mean, it's a little self-serving. But basically, the article is too big to win. And if... Matt, if you want to tweet that out. But in terms of his conclusions on what things, you know, could have been different and how easy it would have been for the world to be in way better shape if you just would have listened to him instead of the other stuff. I mean, I don't buy that necessarily, but I really enjoyed the article in the sense that I didn't have any idea of all these, or maybe I did at one time. He basically starts from like 1980-something. All these places in Africa, all these places in Asia, and how basically our screw-ups, he didn't like the neocons, to say the least, our screw-ups basically have forced the world into this mess that it's in, and how if we just would have used a little more intelligence on probably 10 different occasions, the world would look a lot different and a lot better. And I'm not so sure he's wrong on that, Jeb, but there's several themes that kind of come through here that, again, I hope Mike piles in. I'm not so sure it really changed. I mean, one of the themes seems to be, and one of the ones that I zeroed in on last night as I read it again, hoping I think I'd talk about it today, was the themes that there's people that run these countries. He keeps strapping back. I know I'm skipping around here, Jen, so help me out. He keeps strapping back into trying to impose democracy on a place that's not ready for it is a fool's errand. Like my buddy Mark Duffy told me once, if you don't have the concept of people in office, if you get voted out, actually leaving. We got one of those guys now, you know, whatever. Or the idea that if you lose, you're the loyal opposition, and you retrench, and you figure out, okay, why did I lose? Why do the people like the other guys better? Figure out what you're doing wrong, what your message is bad, and retool for 2 years later, or 4 years later, or 6 years later, right? Is if you don't have that, if you don't have the British, you know, from the Magna Carta to today, you know, the British, European, French Revolution, U.S. tradition, you can't dump democracy on a place on top if nobody even knows. Let's put it this way, it's usually very unsuccessful. And I'm going to say you can't argue with that, Jan, except for the fact that at some point, you want to get there. So... I don't know what the middle ground is from the tyrant. Okay, you're not ready for democracy, but now what? You know, he keeps forgetting it. He keeps saying we bumped this guy out of power in Yemen, all right, or somebody bumped him out of power. We didn't help the guy who was there in power, and these bunch of rebels took over, killed a million people, and all of a sudden the place is a bleep hole forever. I mean, he's right about maybe the mistakes and the carnage and how it could have been different. I don't know what that means. I mean, I don't know what the middle ground is government-wise. Do you? What is the middle between a brutal tyrant and, by the way, a democracy that sort of works? What is the middle ground? I don't know. Do you?
No. Do you ever read the novel The Ugly American, Tom?
Parts of it.
I mean, that's going way far back now. But and that's just...
I thought it had to do with travel, not knocking off governments.
The exportable American. You know.
Yeah.
The Ugly American was, you know, I mean, the thing that kind of opened my eyes to when I read, this is, you know, a long time ago, but that how it, you know, so much of what foreign policy needs to do is to model itself as something that is desirable and that people genuinely find attractive enough to make it happen with, you know, minimal help from outside. And this, you know, is of course, you know, ideal. It's so ideal it probably never really happens. But what's going on in that book is, you know, it's the bad modeling that is taking the upper hand. You know, it's the crooked interests, it's the rapacious business people. They're the ones who are really being modeled. And so you got, at the very least, a mixed message that you're sending out, because you got all the, you know, all of the stature of your democratic and, you know, representative systems on one hand. On the other hand, you've got, you know, absolutely unthrottled business opportunism, and you can't really get people to look at one and not at the other for very long. They're going to see them as somehow mingled together.
Well, yeah, that's another.
It's really hard to sell the product.
Well, you're right. That's another. It always happens that the place in Africa that we're concerned about for the moment happens to have oil, happens to have cocoa, has to have something we want, or, you know, or as now it's rare earth elements or something like that. So yeah, it's hard to break that apart. But you also, you know, but just in general, a simple case, not a simple case. I mean, you remember, since you're an older guy. I mean, the Mo man, Muammar Gaddafi. He was in Libya. Okay, so the guy, you know, he and nobody wants to think of the man as a good man, right? Because wasn't he part of? Didn't he kill hostages? Wasn't he leaning out of one of the planes that got hijacked or something when he was young?
I mean, we dealt with worse allies than him.
Yeah, but I'm saying but the point is, did he hijack a plane, was headed for Israel, or what the hell did he do? And people got, but he was leaning out of the pilot's seat, wasn't he? Or some story. And
I think so, yeah.
But now he, of course, gets to Libya. And over a period of time, we're not ever going to accuse the dude to be a nice man. And all of a sudden, Libya is kind of out of the news for a while. You know, and Libya is a place that, out of all the places in Africa, it seems like it's making some progress. People aren't really bothering the people around him. And now all of a sudden he's there, but all of a sudden we want him out of there. Now, whether that was the change, he also nationalized the oil companies, didn't he, or did he? I think he stole the oil companies.
That would have been our sufficient reason for us to remove him.
Oh, yeah. So all of a sudden now he stole the stuff from the oil companies. Isn't that where Armin Hammer ended up making big, he ended up going in there with Occidental and at least getting contracts, because they didn't know how to run the oil field, so he got contracts to run what used to be, you know, Exxon and other guys' oil, some story like that. But I'm saying the dude is not a good man. But all of a sudden, we blow him up out of there. Now, according to this guy, that area of Libya, now they're supplying arms to all the other no-goodniks in Africa, and in a place is a hotbed of, it's become like another Lebanon or something. Well, would you rather have him back? Probably. I mean, right? I mean, if he's still alive, where the hell he is, but same way in Iraq. There was nothing good about Saddam Hussein, except that he sort of kept the place together, and he was our buffer against Iran, right? So we blow him the hell out of there. Now what?
Our foreign policy is littered with these kinds of, you know, patterns. Stuff. Now, look, Cuba is, you know, the closest to home example.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it started out, you know, after, you know, Batista had become too much even for the United States to put up with. And, you know, the mob had sort of gone to great excesses there, but more than what was considered good for business, you know, everywhere else. We didn't want Batista. Castro presented himself. At the time, you know, people thought, well, this guy could be our ally. He could be somebody, you know, we could, you know, depend on to do X, Y, Z or whatever, or at least be on pretty much the same side as we are. And that, you know, seemed to be the case early in the Cuban Revolution, that this could be our guy. And there were, you know, of course, Castro, of course, you know, indulged that and played into it, and made it appear that he was, you know, able to be controlled. Of course, he wasn't. And we learned to our everlasting chagrin that, you know, it turned out quite differently. But it's the same story in Iran and Iraq and, you know, other places in the Middle East where we, you know, decided here's what's going to be best for the people here. And, incidentally, the same is going to be the best for us, too. So
I'm going to push back a little on the Cuba thing. Castro would love to have had us as an ally. By the way, he always wanted to play Major League Baseball. He was a hell of a baseball player. I'm not saying he was a terrific guy or anything like that, but I don't think, when push comes to shove, we were incapable from a government standpoint of favoring him over the mafia people that control the place, or U.S. Pineapple and all, whatever those places were that owned all the plantations and stuff. They were too powerful.
And Russia was too powerful too.
Yeah.
They were courting him the same way we were to some extent. And he was just able to be bought off by the highest bidder. What he wanted most of, he got.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna read this paragraph real quick here, Jen. And again, it's a big long article, and it talks a whole bunch of places that I've forgotten all about or didn't know about. So, in terms of his conclusions and everything, I mean, the head of Blackwater. He and I probably don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but in terms of history, he sure as hell knows a lot more history than I do, but I'll just read this quick one. It says, meanwhile, the same approach, because he's talking about Trump made a million errors and Biden's made a million errors and whatever. But anyway, meanwhile, the same approach is still failing in Africa. There have been a staggering 9 coup d'etats across Africa in the last 4 years. Did you know that? I did not. I mean, I would have guessed there were a couple. I wouldn't have guessed 9. Mainly in ex-colonial French regions, where decades-long insurgency have exploded following the destruction of Libya. The looting of massive Libyan state arsenals following the overthrow of Gaddafi flooded the region with weapons. I did not know that. A long insufficient coin, that's the French, like foreign legions kind of thing. Long insufficient coin operations by France and their USG partners reached the end of the road. Local militaries ousted their Paris-sponsored leadership. The current U.S. humiliation in Niger and Chad, where U.S. forces are being forced to vacate their new multi-billion-dollar facilities built to support drone operations across Africa as a result. And evidently, that's one of the reasons why the Houthis are back. But evidently, Libya, when the thing fell apart, all these arms that Gaddafi had built up are now just being sold to everybody. Or at least he didn't do that. All the other bad things he did. I mean, all these things have major ramifications, these decisions. That's why I liked the article. Plus, it was a history lesson for me. When I knew Gaddafi was out of there, I didn't know the pluses and minuses of it. I know that's how Arm & Hammer made a lot of money for Occidental, and they went into these areas after other people booted them out and did consulting work. Because I remember when, it's one of the bizarre things, Jan, we were young, when the Mo Man first took over Libya, right? And they had all the people over there growing oil. And this is how, you know, how can I say this about the country I love? Americans could be like roaches in other places when there's money to be made, right? I mean, we had so many people over in Libya, because I remember, if you remember this, Jen, they'd say, all non-essential personnel should leave Libya. And then it was like, all families of essential personnel should leave Libya. Then everybody should leave Libya. Like, the last group out was like 10 or 15,000 people. And I kept thinking, what are they doing over there? What are they stealing in this place? That after all these warnings to get the hell out, we still had like 10 or 15,000 people there. John, we're everywhere if there's something to be had.
Right at the meat of things, too.
We got our nose in the trough no matter where it is. It doesn't make us bad. I mean, to a certain extent, we're probably benefiting people there. I mean, I don't know who gets benefited first, but they're still better off with us there helping out, I think. Helping out, that's an interesting term. But these kinds of, you know, these two presidents are going to be capable of making these kinds of... Do they want to listen to the detail this guy put in this article? I mean, they might not want his... I don't like half of his conclusions necessarily, but the detail... The fact is, the dude knows a lot about history, or somebody wrote it for him. And I didn't know any of these stuff.
He's representative of a class of, you know, bureaucrats isn't really the right term, but that they are essentially... apolitical. I mean, I'm just speaking in terms of political parties. I don't think there's any allegiance one way or the other there. The deep state is one possible way of characterizing them, but they survive whatever administration of the moment you're dealing with. And this is why you have, you know, squabbles, sometimes, you know, horrible struggles between intelligence armed, you know, communities of intelligence, not just our warring parties among themselves, but other countries' intelligence who are saying one thing publicly and doing another thing privately. So it becomes very scrambled. And although I do agree that what he gives is a good history lesson, I wouldn't want to consider him somebody necessarily who would speak for me or that
I'm with you on that.
He's not somebody who, you know, I would vote for.
Well, as far as
endorsing his policies.
Well, Greg was talking about that in the way in. I said, Greg, I think you have to learn, me being the old guy and him the younger guy, you have to learn that you can learn from anybody, not necessarily their conclusions. I mean, if I don't think Jose Canseco is a genius on a lot of levels, but if he starts talking about steroids, I'm going to listen because he sure knows a hell of a lot more about that than I do. I mean, so you know, I'm willing to listen to anybody who can add something to the mix. Doesn't mean that, you know, I don't know if you're a Star Trekker, but they landed somewhere and they had these guys that were doing, like, matter of fact, it was much like the people today demonstrating. There was a group that was essentially insurgents against the government. And the one guy sounded just, you know, sounded kind of like the hippie. And he's rattling off the things they wanted the government to do differently. And so, you know, Kirk wanted none of it, as you can imagine. And Spock was listening. And the guy says to Spock, Mr. Spock, you agree with me. Spock says, I didn't say I agreed. I said I understood. There is a difference. You know, I want to know the both sides of this. And I would have thought, and the other thing that picks me up out of this article, John, is that I would have thought that these guys, the Blackwaters and the guys of the world, were real fans of the neocons because they're the ones that gave him all the business. He hates those guys. Why? I mean, I was talking to Mike yesterday for an extended period of time. Where did Rumsfeld and Cheney and all those guys come from? Were they in the CIA with Bush 1, or how did they just descend on the world? Because that used to be the Lodges and the Cabots and those people, and all of a sudden the neocons just pulled out of somewhere. Where do they all come from?
Well, Rumsfeld was, you know, part of Nixon's administration. He goes pretty far back. Richard Perl and, you know, Paul Wolfowitz and the other people were so, you know, in your face, you know, back in 2001, had always been around. William Crystal, people like that, they were very much kind of fringe people in the Republican Party. Not some that were, you know, Democrats start, and they really became a kind of like a, you know, reactionary. By that I mean, you know, extremely conservative, kind of, you know, pushing the American agenda. The Robert Kagans of the world, Victoria Nuland, these people who you know got lots of power under the Democrats, really, you know. And then when Trump came in and Nuland got out, she didn't feel as a, you know, hospitable environment anymore, and she was right. But you know, they're back and forth again now under the Democrats, and this is why, you know, people get so disgusted with the, you know, interplay between supposed differences of opinion about, you know, how you strategize, allies, enemies, how do you fight a war, who do you fight wars against, who do you not fight wars with. And this has been so completely garbled now under Obama and Biden that I think people have really lost any kind of trust in the system that takes data.
Well, the guy starts out by criticizing Reagan. You know, he screwed up. But the one here in Iraq has been I did not know this. I asked on the show once in a while, what's going on? It says, today Iraq is subjugated by Iran, with Tehran making key decisions and approving all key ministry appointments, including who becomes prime minister. That's not what we wanted in Iraq. Their power is backed by popular mobilization units, PMUs, or Hass al-Shabi, whatever that is, an Iranian-controlled proxy mirroring Hezbollah in Lebanon. The PMUs are paid for by the Iraqi government, armed in most cases with American weapons, and led either by the Iranian-appointed commanders or by serving Iranian officers directly. How the hell did we, at the end of the day, how did we end up screwing up to the point where, because we're the ones that broke it, where that became the outcome? I mean, whatever it is, that's not too bright. That's not where we wanted to go, was it?
Well, the thing I'm reminded of, Tom, is the, you know, novel, The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, where you... As many times as I've watched that movie and think I know from the very beginning exactly whose side.
What a dark, what a dark movie! Boy, oh boy!
Oh, and that to me is just it really lays bare how there is no way of tracking what allegiance really means, or, you know, when you say I'm an ally of so and so, it's all for appearance sake. It's all for, you know, the, what the other side thinks about this so-called alliance. It has nothing to do with reality. So you end up playing on the same side as your enemies, because your enemies are really your friends, although the other side doesn't recognize that. And by the end of it, it's a complete moral vacuum. There's absolutely nothing at the end of that movie.
John, I think we have Mike for a couple minutes.
I want to be on this side.
I think we have Mike for a couple of minutes, and then we got to go to Nancy. But Mike, if you're going to opine even for a minute what John and I are talking about, I'm not trying to give any conclusions here. I'm just trying to give a little bit of history out of some of the stuff that I had sort of forgotten about. Can you add something in a couple of minutes? Then we got to go to Nance. So we had Mike.
I don't know. You got me.
We got Nance. Well, we don't have. We got Nance. Nance, you've been listening in. I mean, this is. John, I'm with you on the fact that I'm not going to take this guy's conclusions and like put him in the Oval Office. I'm not going to do that. But I'm really stunned at how the guy starts with Reagan, and all along the line, every guys have made. You know, let's say they've done stuff that have had outcomes that wasn't exactly the way we wanted it to end. And it's been a long history of that, Reagan. It's been a long time since Reagan was in here. What is he, early 80s or something?
80, he was elected, inaugurated 81, yeah.
I mean, those guys were around for him too, wasn't he? Weren't they? I seem to recall, what's that outfit? I think Nancy's a member. What's that outfit? Actually, no, I think it's all males. What's the outfit in California, the tree something group?
Oh, Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, where they go out in this big log cabin, and wasn't there a picture with like Cheney and Bush and Reagan, all those guys together sitting there in their flannel shirts one? I seem to recall. They're all
Nixon said he wanted a part of it because he thought it was a bunch of pansies or something. It was his race.
Well, Nixon was kind of the, he didn't, what was his story? He was a brilliant guy as a student. Wasn't he recruited to Harvard or Yale or someplace? But one of his parents was sick, so he had to go to the Quaker College in California or something?
Whittier College, yeah.
No, is that still around?
Oh, yeah, in Whittier, California.
Yeah. Well, Nance, bear with us for a second. The roots of the current situation reach back to the election of Reagan in 1980. That's when he got elected. Reagan started a pivot from 35 years of containment to a more aggressive approach covered by deficits. Channeled economically, politically, culturally, socially through a covert action, these measures helped to bring an end to the Soviet Union, but at a critical strategic cost, partly as a consequence of the central economic role the USSR had come to play for the U.S. defense industry. The opportunity to positively engage with Russia after 1991 was rejected by the dominant neoconservative faction and their military industrial complex. He basically paints a picture that these neocons were so in tight with the military that you couldn't trust any decision that they came out with. And I'm not so sure he's wrong about that either. But I don't know. You know more about this than I do. Originally Trotskyites, that's a name from the past, the neocons had taken root in the corporatist wing of the Republican Party and gradually increased in influence, so eventually become the dominant in the Washington Beltway foreign policy and emblematic of its mentality and continuous warfare funded by an unlimited fiat printing press. He's kind of right about that. The deficits of... Of course, now I think they go more to hospitalization and other things than they do to the military, but kind of started out that way, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're not going to solve any problems, so why don't we do a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk to Nancy about stuff today. Who's going to fund all these buildings that are going under, and what the hell? SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 67, market, whatever it is, loves it. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Support the Stocks and Jocks team. Hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm somehow Matt Byrne on the board playing old commercial. Nance and John and Matt, I was thinking about those items we don't have for sale anymore. We did when Sarah was here. I was thinking of getting a Stocks and Jocks concealed carry clothing line. What do you think?
Morning, Nancy.
I think we could probably do well.
How are
you? I think we could do well. The SP Futures up 22.
Yeah.
The SP Futures up 62.
It's the thong, though.
Well, yeah. Well, they have a concealed carry thong. I don't know. That'd have to be an unusually shaped young lady, but I don't even want to think about that. God. Anyway. No, you got me thinking about that.
Really. Now my head's just totally got an image I don't want to see.
You know what, though? If you do go on a concealed carry thing, they do have ladies' underwear that you can put, like, derringers and stuff into it. And they also have ladies' upper support garments, shall we say. If the lady's big enough, there's a holster on each side.
Wow.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, isn't it?
Well, what good does it do to wear the thong if you have to wear something over the thong?
Well, you have a holster somewhere. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. It just doesn't look very good when you're taking pants
think
out
that,
of your pants.
I don't think John and I are very conversant with what thongs feel like. I know I'm not.
It's for those Charlie's Angels types.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
You guys, maybe they make them for men.
I'm sure they do. But I don't want to go there either.
My body is not built for them.
But you brought it up.
Oh, I just said, you know, I know nothing about thongs.
I don't even think they fit on the dogs.
Oh, God. Nikkei down 37. Let's get into something here. Nikkei down 37.1%, 38,236. Hang Seng up 102.5%, 18,578. Shanghai up 35, 31.40. So it took a while, but the Chinese putting money in the system has popped their market up like they said they were trying to do. On Friday, 2 days in a row, Dow was up 450, S&P up 63, NASDAQ up 315. Those are huge days. Europe, we've got the DAX. These guys are following our lead a little bit. DAX more than the rest, up 194. That's 1.1%. FTSE up 41.5%. Kick around almost a full 1% at 0.9, up 72. We've got bonds. This is kind of the reason why bond interest rates have come slipping down since the Fed meeting. But we were down 5. Now we're only down 3. 4.47. The bund down 6 basis points, 2.44. Japan unchanged at 0.90. We've got oil creeping up a little as Saudi said they're going to cut back on some of their oil, but it's only up 64 cents to 78.75. Brent up 54 cents, 83.50. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.18. Arbub up a penny, 2.56. Gold, pretty good rally here. Well, it was up 20-something. Now it's only up 17.60, 23.26. Silver up 58 cents, 27.27. Copper up 6 cents, 4.62. We've got foreign exchange, the U.S., the dollar is pretty steady, 107.8 against the euro. It was stronger. It's come down just a hair there. Same way with the pound. Is it 125.8? Was a little lower than that. And we have Bitcoin, last but not least, down 233, 63,000, 687. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:36 on Monday, May 6, 2024. As far as traffic on Chicago, construction continues on the Kennedy Expressway. On the inbound, traffic is concentrated from Austin Avenue until East Ohio Street, so keep that in mind. As far as weather in Chicago, 48 degrees this morning, high of 61 degrees. Expect partly cloudy skies for most of the day downtown. Down in Phoenix, 60 degrees this morning, clear skies and a high of 87 degrees. In the MLB yesterday, Cubs won their game against the Milwaukee Brewers 0-5, and White Sox won as well against St. Louis Cardinals 5-1. In the NBA playoffs yesterday, first round, Game 7, Cleveland Cavaliers came out on top against Orlando Magic 106-94 was the final score. As far as the hockey NHL playoffs, East second round saw New York Rangers beat Carolina Hurricanes 4-3. In the West first round, Dallas Stars won against Vegas Knights 2-1. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Nance, I don't know if you were listening much. We're talking about this article that, you know, Jan and I are not huge fans of the dude, but it was an amazing sort of history lesson all the way back to Reagan, all these different foreign policy things I had forgotten all about. I mean, they do start to become a blur, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I know I'm blurred. When you guys went back to Reagan, I was like, whoa, what was that?
Well, you know, but the thing of it is, though, in terms of the money, if you want to see when we started having these real budget problems, you can't just, I mean, there are people that will say, oh, God, look at Biden's deficit. This really did start back then. I mean, when Reagan, you know, spent all that money and, you know, and munitions, and then, by the way, cut taxes, and then he raised taxes. And then when Bush 2 came along and invaded Iraq on a credit card, I mean, it's really where all these big deficits started. And then, of course, the Democratic guys, you know, in Clinton's administration, we went the other way. But part of that is to do with when you have stocks running way up and then running way down, the sneaky thing that your government does, and most people who are investors kind of don't get this. Nance, if you buy a stock at 100 and sell it at 300, you have to pay capital gains on 200, right? If you buy it, if you buy it at 300 and you sell it at 100, you can only take off $3,000 a year for the rest of your life, and you better live a long time. It's not a two-way street on the taxes. But anyway, you were mentioning, was it you? Oh, I was saying something yesterday. We were driving around buying flowers. Although I did get some good flowers. I bought my brother one of those, actually at Odds Insistence, a couple of the pepper plants where the one is so hot you can't even, like, touch the plant.
Oh, really? Did you go get the tomatoes?
Yeah. We're long tomatoes. Oh, okay. We got stuff out in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, but the... was it you that told her that 40% of the people live in homes are paid for, and out of the rest, what, 38% have a mortgage under 3.5% or something? So they're not going anywhere. You look at these prices on the home markets, and I guess my question to you is, and Jen, is it a phony market because it's so narrow of which ones are actually trading? I mean, when I say a phony market, phony in terms of price. I mean, if everybody had a sell, would the price be this high? How could it be?
This is what happened, what, in 2004, 2005? No matter what you bought, I mean, everything was going for fabulous money, right?
Yeah.
And then when we had all these people who, when the foreclosures started... and we just had a glut of them, that's when they came out and said, wait a minute, if you qualify for the HARP program, you know, we'll let you stay in your house. And because it was devaluing homes all across the country, it was just a spread of everywhere you look, the homes were being devalued. So I'd have to say, you know, they seem very high to me right now, but you don't know which way this thing is gonna go.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if you have a stock, like look at the Trump stock, okay, the puts are ridiculously high by any stretch. Yet you sit there and go, well, me as a trader, I go, they're not ridiculously high because you can't borrow the stock, you can't sell the stock short. Nobody can locate, nobody can borrow. So there's no way for the person you're buying the put from to hedge their position. So I'm not saying the prices are wrong. I'm just saying the market, the prices are there because the market is in some way constricted. It's not as free yes. and open as it normally would be. And my question
and
is,
I believe that's happening with the homes right now.
That's what I mean. But to what extent, though? I mean, how can you tell how much? The $406,000 median price, should it be 280? Should it be 395? I mean, if the market was open and all of a sudden the rates were had not had this run up, I mean, how do you tell what your risk is?
Well, in my opinion, your risk is if you're buying the house and you're only going to stay there, you know, 2 or 3 years, don't do it. Just rent it then.
Well, the rents are high because everybody's doing it. You think that's why the rents are high? Is because people are afraid to buy?
I think it's a combination of all the things that you're talking about are just going to turn into the perfect storm and nobody knows what to do. You know, you take the risk also is if you don't jump in, if you don't get your toe in the water, how are you, you know, you're missing out on what the houses are going up as well. So, but I do believe to answer your direct question, which is what is the risk if you have to sell, there is that risk is out there. But it's kind of like everybody's forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And back 5 or 6 years ago, that's all you heard out of people's mouth. I don't want to buy, like, at the high. I was underwater when we bought our first house for a long time. So that's part of the problem that I'm seeing. But really, the other thing is, if you buy and it's, you know, everything stays status quo, you should be okay.
Well,
your home is an investment; it should go up.
Well, you would think, yeah. I mean, but there's been pockets when it hasn't. But yeah, by and large, I had back in the 2006-7-8 area there. Had a friend. She lived on, I don't know, Jan, what's the name of the area? Way the hell out. There's a part of Chicago that goes out so far west on the north side, it's scary. It goes all the way up to Cumberland, damn near.
Yeah, so you almost you're butting up against Norwich, maybe?
Well, how you go from the K's to the L's to the M's, the N's. Well, she was in the O's. That's how far.
Go to the P's, too, Tom.
Oh, really? Well, but she was, you know, she was like...
Pittsburgh Avenue is still in the city.
Yeah, I mean, she was... I mean, the way she'd take the Milwaukee West or Northwest line or something home and get off at Cumberland. There was no CTA or nothing that went that far. Anyway, but she told me that they had a big block party and all the people. And there was, they were very nice neighborhood, mostly framed, but very well taken care of houses. Typical, you know, Chicago used to be area with bungalows and everybody. The area was mostly white, half Hispanic, and, you know, some black, but it was a integrated area. She said all we did was talk at the block party about how they couldn't possibly afford their home that they currently lived in if they had to pay the current price. And I just wonder if we're between the price and the mortgage right now, if we're not sort of there. I mean, if you were to, and you're probably the person that can mention, what percentage of the people you've done mortgages for in the last 5 years, if they had to pay the current mortgage price, how many people could have been in the house, Nance? Is it 90%, 40%?
Boy, Tom, that's just impossible to answer. I mean, some couples come right up to the top of my head, but that doesn't mean, you know, everybody else, no. You know, I'm like, I can't, probably maybe a third, 25%.
Well, that's not probably not as bad as it was in 2006, maybe, or so.
No, right. It's not there yet. It's just not there yet. You know, I happened to go to the same, I believe we probably went to the same flower place, Claude and I did.
She was mentioning that.
Okay, on Saturday. And we were talking about that, you know, why isn't there any inventory, and that's when this 40 and 60% discussion ensued. So you've already got 78% of the people tied up, right? People who don't have a house payment aren't going to leave, right? And then another 38% out of the 60, so that's 78% of the people are satisfied doing what they're doing. So
well,
it only leaves 22% of the market.
Satisfied / stuck.
Well, yeah, okay. But still, they've got a home. All right, so then we started talking about those new townhomes, deluxe townhomes that they're building. And really, who's going to leave the comfort of a home is a home. A home is what a house is a home, it's what you make of it. But do you really want to leave it to pay $700,000 for actually less room than what you have now? And it's just a basic model.
John, we're talking about a new development right near Odd, and the townhomes are going for probably, 30% or 40% more than Odd thinks a house is worth.
They're $699 starting price. It's $55,000 more. If you want to add like a third garage, and it's $98,000 if you want to have a basement.
And I'm going to say none of those are as nice as Odd's house.
Go ahead.
No, they would probably appeal to people who have a lot of cash to play around with because they sold a house that's now too big for them. They're empty nesters, and they are interested in downsizing. And if they can now get rid of their lawnmower and everything else and move into townhome development, where they'll gladly pay for people to do their landscaping and right. have less space, that doesn't trouble them. They can maybe pay cash for it if they've done well in the market and sold quickly. The thing I see happening, though, is that there's a whole part of the real estate market that is not moving, and that, say, the houses in the $200,000 range are not attractive to people who are just barely scraping by on their, two-income economy, and they can't afford a mortgage to give them a $200,000 house in any shape or form. So those properties are accumulating an inventory. The buyers for them are not, maybe they'd love to be able to buy, but they can't afford to buy it. And at the upper end of the spectrum, you've got people who are perfectly happy to buy, cash for a house, $400,000 or $500,000 or $1 million, if they've got, a minimal mortgage that they have to take out, or no mortgage at all. They don't really see the interest rates as a barrier to buying. So that's why the median prices, I think, have stayed relatively high. It masks how the properties not at the high end are not moving at all. There are just no buyers.
It does seem like it seems like the numbers, if you look at ability to afford versus the price, are a little bit odd. Let's kind of shift gears. These places in New York and here, these buildings that are going for 20 cents on the buck and stuff, where do those write downs occur? I mean, are those at banks or are those at BlackRock?
Those are all at banks, and then after that, they're at banks, and then the banks have them on their balance sheet or as investors that took them in. So that's a whole different ball game. But then in your IRA, somebody like BlackRock could have bought the building.
Okay. What a thing came out. Remember, what the hell was her name? Is it Christine Whitney? She allegedly called the 2007 crash. She's the wife of the wrestler that's been on our show a couple times. What the hell is his name? Where's Matt Weber when I need him? The guy who lives in Bermuda, he's been on the show. Johnny, remember him? He's been on the show a couple times. He's a wrestler, became investor.
I can't remember. Was it Christine Whitmer who was
in New Jersey? And the guy's name is, he had like two or three different wrestling names. Every time you get a new manager, you had to get a new name. He was a football player from someplace. Real nice guy. He was a great guest. Love to get him back. But she now is talking about how the market for home equity loans, that's why I was dying to get Nance on this morning, has dropped from $700 billion down to $350. That sounds a little weird to me. But now, not Fannie but Freddie Mac now has decided to be able to issue home equity loans. They don't issue. Fannie and Freddie don't issue loans at all, do they? Nancy, don't they?
They buy the loans. They package them and sell them. Well, they what they do is they Fannie and the five people that all the loans go to the VA, FHA, Fannie, Freddie, and then Federal Home Loan Bank. So they buy the loans and then they package them up, and then they you're right. Then they sell them in bonds to the government. So what she's saying is that Freddie is now starting to say, okay, we will purchase home equity loans from the banks.
Okay, that's not what that article said, but that's why I wanted to ask you. So
yeah, that's how it works. Or now, like, I could start selling a first and a second. In other words, meaning avoiding people getting private mortgage insurance. So let's say they only have 5% down, then 80% would be on a fixed rate mortgage and 15% would be on some type of home equity loan. And what it's saying then, Freddie Mac would buy the whole piece.
Now,
never been allowed before. That's never been allowed.
What is it? Is it a proposal or is it done?
I believe Freddie's talking about it. I do not believe it's official yet. But they are talking about doing it. But okay, it's never been done before, and I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of Christmas tree bells. On top of that, it's not going to be an easy thing to have happen, because Fannie and Freddie have strict rules, right? So now they're going to put, if they allow the home equity without the private mortgage insurance, that rate's going to be pretty, I would think, a lot higher, things to that nature, because you're eliminating, on one hand, you're eliminating the debt to the customer's not going to pay the private mortgage insurance, but what are they going to pay in a
Why would being able to get another loan stop you from having to pay the private mortgage insurance?
Pardon me?
Why would getting a second loan mean you don't have to pay the private mortgage insurance?
Because you automatically have to pay it if you're over 80%.
Okay, right, so
you have to pay it, and all FHA loans have private mortgage insurance on them.
Under the proposal,
automatic.
Well, under the proposal, can you do it in advance? In other words, can I say, not that I sure as hell don't need another career, but what if Wad finds me some place that I can buy for $240 and the place is kind of falling down, so I know I need to put another $200 into it, so that's $440, and then Wad tells me if I do it right, of course she'd be telling me how to do it the whole way, but that's okay, it's worth $600. Now, if I do that, can I get both of those loans out of the gate from you, or one has to follow after?
No, because if the house only you get the value of what the house appraised for, or the appraisal, or your loan, and is becomes the value. So if you pay $240 and it appraises at $240, the maximum you could get is 5% less than $240.
All right, so then I'm going to have to go get a construction loan someplace, fix the place up. Fix the place up, have it reappraised. Now it's worth $440. I can probably get a second from Freddie to cover the construction loan, because now it's a home equity loan, not a construction loan.
I don't now. See, you're talking about getting the second loan.
Yeah.
You know the home.
No,
equity
it would be loan. It would be the third loan.
They wouldn't. It wouldn't work that way. A construction loan, you would have to totally pay that off with a new mortgage.
Right.
Okay. So you can't get a second there.
Yeah, you can't get a second. I don't believe Freddie is giving you a home equity loan in and of by itself.
Well, the reason why I ask is A, it's very interesting, but B, her opinion was that this is going to put $1 trillion, theoretically, if it becomes easy to do, it's going to put $1 trillion into the market, essentially, like an increase in the money supply. Like, in other words, in her mind, the way the article is written, I think she's bright enough, she knows that's probably not going to happen. It sounded like Freddie was going to actually issue the loan, which means that the government would essentially come out and give you the dough, and maybe it's sort of like them buying up a mortgage, which would have increased the money supply, and they would have had to print money to do it. Now, what you're saying, that's not going to happen, because the bank's going to have to be loaned first, and then they turn and buy it from the bank, and then package it. So,
and a construction loan, the bank actually buys you out of your first mortgage, and then gives you the money to build based on what it's going to be in the future, and then at the end, that's only a note. and you have to pay back the note, and then they release the property, and you go get your loan.
All right, I'm unfortunately coming at this as a monetary theorist, not as somebody knows what they're talking about in the business like you. What I'm saying is, right now, when Freddie comes and buys the loan, the bank issues the loan. Now, theoretically, that could increase the money supply, right? But now, Freddie just buys the loan, packages it, and resells it. They're neutral in the creation of money spot.
That is correct. So I don't know. I mean, they're not going to get in the business to...
Right.
You're never going to get to them directly. It's always going to be through someone else.
I go, she made it sound, John, this is where I was incredulous, that they were going to start issuing the loans, which means, wait a minute, that's a whole different program, because now
that's... That's a whole different personnel group. I mean, no, that's I would say that is not going to happen.
Why is Freddie the leader in this? Who runs Freddie versus Fannie or the other guys?
Fannie and Freddie are competitors, and they are government. They're supposedly backed by the government, but they are not they are a separate entity. Unfortunately, when the crash hit, Fannie and Freddie were taken over by the government, even though they still run independently, and they're supposed to release them when they come out of the hole.
Yeah.
And they're making so much money for them that the government has never released them.
The stock still trades like it's going to happen someday. Well, I don't know about that. It's been a long time.
I think Fannie is, what, 35 cents? One time it was worth a nickel or 35 cents
a
share.
Yeah, it was FNMA, I think it is. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me check. But they were $2 for a while. And people kept thinking, you know, all of a sudden you're going to get something, and the government gets this huge check every quarter from them, don't they?
As far as I know, yes. And there's a lawsuit pending from the employees because they all had these huge stock options, and they owned stock, and they got nothing for their money. And they're saying that's why the government isn't releasing it, because they would have to get paid back or whatever.
Well, FNMA is now Fidelity something something, so it's not the symbol. We'll dig out what the symbol is, but they are still...
We got another big loop office building to chew on, too, the 70 West Madison building, which is the old 3 First National Plaza, is in foreclosure now. Their owner was trying to sell it in January. They paid $350 million for it 10 years ago, couldn't find any buyers. Now the lender has started foreclosure on it. I was digging into it a little bit. The mortgage is a portion of it is held by Bank of America, another portion by PNC Bank. Raymond James has another piece of it, and two German-based financial institutions, Ariel Bank, two ventures of them have the rest of it. So it's about $275 million in the mortgage balance. The building's about 68% occupied on paper, which means it may be, you know, 55% actually occupied. Beautiful building.
That's the one just north of the old bank building.
Yeah, it faces on, it's on the north side of Madison.
Yeah.
The one for Stashel's opposite of them.
It's got that
side.
Really fancy restaurant in the lobby.
Yeah, which I think is closed.
Really? Cause what that was
the Henry Moore sculpture in it. I worked in the building for about a year back in the 80s. Gorgeous building.
I went there. I took some client to lunch there. Lunch there was an arm and a leg for. But it was some real high end Italian place, wasn't it?
Yeah, Rosetta. Was it the name of country? It's had many different incarnations.
You know, what I went to lunch there with was Senator Mike Murphy, the guy who was the senator, the Republican second guy in charge of the Illinois Senate. Matt Murphy.
Yeah.
Matt Murphy, not Mike.
Matt Murphy.
Mike Murphy is our buddy.
If this, remains true to form like every other big building, they could be taking a 50% haircut on it. And the Bank of America and PNC and other places are involved in similar buildings of this size and, risk in this kind of a market. So I see this is now really starting to bite at the banking industry in ways that I always feared it would eventually.
Are these, I'm going to go back to the, we'll run over a minute here, but go back to the Presidential Towers fiasco when that thing was auctioned off where the Pritzkers got it for, are these, how can I say this nicely? I guess I can't. Are these bids rigged? In other words, if a building that went for $130 million 5 years ago is going to go for $20, what if I put up a shingle, we don't raise money like this, but say, okay, How about the Stocks and Jocks listenership? Everyone will sell some shares. We'll have $20 million, and we show up at the office auction. Do we get the building, or is there going to be something wrong with us?
Well, I can guarantee you wouldn't be sitting in the first row at the auction anyway.
What does that mean, Nance?
Well, if they let you in at all. No, I can't say for sure. It's rig time, but it's definitely, you know, control. And at that point, there's so much that may be riding on people who have the inside track on how they want to redevelop something, or somebody they know right away get started. It's going to be, you know, tipped in favor of people who have already kind of done their research on it and are would be best for the city or, you know, the municipality where this thing may be located. So I can't believe it's really like an arm's length auction anymore, any more than it is like an attack sale or other distressed situations. I think there's too much riding on the outcome for it to be an open and above board process.
Nance, we have a common friend, I think you're still here, whenever people were buying up these properties on the south side, some of it was before the Olympics was supposed to be, but all of a sudden there's a vacant spot, or maybe there's a building that the city knocks down, and I think they give the neighbors next door or something some chance to buy it, but by and large, they're being bought up by people, you know, different groups. And one of them, for a while, was a group out of Ireland, of all places, you know, that has a 100-year time horizon. I mean, you know, I wish I did, but I don't. I mean, me personally, why would I go buy, you know, 50 lots in Inglewood thinking that by 2050 the area comes back? I mean, you know, that'd be nice, but I guess I got to try and find, have some heirs first. But he said, yeah. I said, so they were going for, what, 150 a lot or something, Jen, or something like that. And I said, what if I wanted to bid for some of those? He goes, you'd never find out the room number.
They give you the wrong address.
Well, they give you the wrong. Yeah, here you go over here, and I'm sitting there. Hey, am I in the right spot? Oh, God. Nancy, we're still like that, aren't we? It seems.
Well, I mean, the bank I worked at, they had three of those in their portfolio. And the buildings were, you know, they were built. And then the customer bought three of them. Three different customers bought them. And they were $450,000 homes they bought in that neighborhood for the Olympics.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Not well.
Not well. Oh, God. SP Futures up 20. Nancy Futures up 62. Thank you, guys. Nance, maybe I'll see you this week. Or maybe we'll cross paths at the flower place.
Yeah, that's true, because I'll probably be in the car.
Well, yeah, you missed the chance. You could have taken all kinds of big stuff and stuck them in the back of the pickup.
Well, yeah, yesterday I had a commitment to do the communion. So
oh, God.
Now
well,
that's
there you go. Well, that's more important. Besides, all I did was buy tomato plants and a couple of hot peppers. My brother hopes that the bunny rabbits that come in and decimate his garden eat the peppers first and get sick and don't come back.
Oh, meanie.
I don't know if that's going to work out. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Okay.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
I don't need your business. I value it. I'm successful to the point where I don't need to chase your business.